When organizations think about language in a global context, most of the time they think about it as kind of a cost and how many languages do we need and what's the budget? How long is it going to take? But treating it as this idea of a creative multiplier, which is sort of a term we've coined at Phrase, is flipping it entirely, really. So instead of asking sort of how do you manage those different languages, you ask how do you use 15 languages to create 15 different distinct brand experiences, right? And every language carries its own texture, rhythm, and emotional range. A tagline that might be clever in English probably doesn't, you know, work in French, or it could be doesn't work in Japanese. And when you get that right, I think your brand doesn't just exist in that local market. It belongs and it's natural in that market.
So hi and welcome to CMO Convo. I'm Hal Asman, your host and a global marketing leader. Today we have joined with us Jason Hemingway, Chief Marketing Officer at Phrase. Jason, thank you very much for joining my podcast.
Absolute pleasure. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So Jason, you have been working in the intersection of global brand strategy, multilingual content, and the evolving role of AI in marketing. Your work focuses on how organizations can scale personalization across markets, moving beyond traditional localization to build content systems that are structured, culturally fluent, and designed for global growth. Jason, that is very impressive and interesting.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, so maybe before we can start off, maybe you can share a bit about your career journey and what led you to this moment at Phrase.
Yeah, so I mean, I've been in B2B marketing for, God, it's 20 plus years now, hence the amount of grey hairs that I've got, really. But so I've been doing marketing for all of our long, primarily in the B2B space and the technology space. And I think my career sort of started at Dow Jones Newswires, where it was trading room platforms and actually marketing those to traders, which is not an easy job. Given the audience. And I moved from there into more what they called on-demand at that point, but actually kind of evolved into what is called SaaS nowadays. So I've been doing SaaS, software as a service, B2B marketing for many years. And a good 10 years of my career was spent doing marketing technology marketing. So I witnessed the evolution of the marketing technology landscape from, you know, if you look at the Scott Brinker MarTech landscape diagrams, you know, back in 2011, there were a number of marketing technologies. And then now there's thousands and thousands of different types of marketing technologies, all trying to do the same thing, which is essentially kind of engage with customers, manage your internal data and your external outreach to customers. So I think, you know, the MarTech space was where I kind of earned my spurs and became a CMO and all of those kind of things, rising through the ranks of marketing. And then, you know, a few years ago, one of the businesses I was in, we sold that to another business. And I kind of scanned the market and looked at, you know, what could be interesting. I've been in MarTech for years, but are there sort of any other markets that are quite interesting that kind of take that idea of how to engage with customers, but actually evolve it into a market that needs some kind of, you know, evolution in the same way that MarTech did. And I looked at, it came across my desk to become the CMO of Phrase. And I looked at the localization industry and actually what that is about language and how you communicate with customers. And I thought it was an interesting market that was kind of there. It was kind of nascent. Lots of big brands using it, lots of people realizing that they had to kind of translate content and messaging and all of those kind of things for customers. But really, the technology was kind of emerging because it was a service-driven business, mostly. It was done by language service providers or people, linguists, and you'd have big teams. And how do you manage those? How do you do it at scale? And how can technology help? And I could just see this kind of gap where technology can really, really make a difference in that market. So it was exciting. And I joined, and the first one of the biggest projects I did at the beginning was kind of a complete brand refresh, which was interesting. So it was really good. And I think, you know, in the last nearly 4 years that I've been at Phrase, that market has grown. The market's growing, you know, year on year, quite quite significantly, and the technology piece is just growing. And, you know, now with all the AI and tools that's available, that's just accelerating, as it is in many B2B areas. But in the language technology market, it's particularly interesting in the use of generative AI and LLMs and all of those. So I feel like it's an exciting industry. And you know, the core thing I still do is marketing. Despite all the technology, it's just marketing technology, which, you know, I think is, in everything I've ever done in the technology market, it's mostly about simplification of messages and trying to communicate effectively with customers and build those relationships with customers without kind of frightening them off with the technology that's available, bringing them new things that they can use in their day-to-day jobs.
Yeah, thank you very much for sharing. It sounds super interesting, especially about the rebrand. And I would love to ask some questions about it as well.
Yeah.
But before that, so you've mentioned customer data and personalization. And we know that many marketeers are leaning heavily on that. But I would love to ask you, when did you start noticing that actually understanding customer wasn't just enough without understanding the content itself?
Yeah. No, I mean, the specific point about, you know, where marketing became very good at understanding customers, I guess it was, you know, I'd say probably around 10 years ago when MarTech kind of was exploding. And you began to see people investing in data, in customer data platforms. There's always been the theory of segment, target, position, but segmentation and behavioral analytics all kind of came to the fore and has kind of grown as a market over the last 10 years. And I don't think my concern or the thing I observed was that the business outcomes didn't really move at the same sort of pace. So most enterprise teams really have that strong idea of who customers are and what they care about, but the performance or the expectation of things like personalization sort of plateaued in a sense, or gets to a point and then stops. And when you sort of look at why, I think it's down to a sort of simple disconnect. Understanding the customer in many respects isn't enough. The real test is whether that customer understanding or that insight actually improves engagement or the overall brand experience, or indeed some satisfaction. So if the content layer that insight and that, you know, that analytics and that data sits upon doesn't respond to that insight, then almost the value of everything that you're delivering is kind of limited. You end up with really kind of precise targeting and customer understanding, but the content hasn't evolved in the same sort of way. And you know, we see that in the customers that we work with at Phrase. You know, we have a global fintech customer that operates across many different markets, and those customers that they have, they have real-time trading alerts and account updates that influence what decisions they make. And while the customer was really good at targeting and in the regions, some of the messaging was slightly off, or the content was off, and the customers would hesitate because the information wasn't accurately, you know, culturally nuanced to what they want to do. And the problem was how it's expressed. And in some markets, customers needed much more clarity and that kind of reassurance before they acted on the trading alerts or the updates. So they introduced more structure in how that communication was expressed across those markets, you know, things like tone and context. And the messaging reflected how each of the regional differences were impacted. So once they managed to get that context and that content layer working on the insight, they sort of saw their satisfaction rates kind of increase, you know, I think it was something like 70 to 90% or something around those. So in many respects, I think the constraint isn't the insight or wasn't the insight. It was, what are the systems that you need to deliver that insight or that content with context, and how you set up your organization and how organizations set their technology up to sort of harness that and use that to customers when they're communicating across many different regions.
Yeah, and I think that is what takes me to the next question. So you are mentioning organizations that are, kind of like spread wide internationally. How do they ensure that the messaging actually lands into different markets, right? Because usually you have this kind of like headquarter, and the headquarter is great.
Yeah.
The messaging, how do you do the rollout into different markets? And you also mentioned cultural nuance.
Yeah. Well, there's often kind of a gap between where that global strategy sits and the local execution. And And oftentimes businesses are very in the centralized functions, they're very strong. You know, they've got clear messaging, strong positioning, well-developed campaigns. And the breakdown often happens because you create that all in one sort of central place with a single context, if you will, and then you adapt it afterwards. And that really relies on the local teams taking what the global teams have done to reinterpret and adjust it. And over time, that kind of leads to something that, you know, that isn't aligned fully, because you're not scaling the content, you're scaling all of that rework. And in many large enterprises where buying decisions involve multiple stakeholders, central campaigns kind of put the emphasis on that speed and innovation messaging that resonates in some markets, you know, but doesn't in others, you know. And customers expect more depth, more validation, or different understanding before they engage, because that's the culture that they're used to. So the regional teams step in and rebuild stuff. And that's a really expensive and slow way of doing it, having them at the end of that kind of process. So I think what sits underneath that is an ecosystem sort of challenge, you know, content that's created in one system and then adapted and distributed and measured separately. Even if each part works, the system isn't really coordinated. So what you really need is kind of this idea of a connected infrastructure. And we see that in some of the customers we have, you know, coordination of campaigns, for example. You know, there's one software company that's one of our customers where, you know, they have strong campaigns, they get them out. But all the different campaigns were going out at different times, you know, so, you know, you'd have to wait before that campaign goes out to that market. And that speed of execution or time to market, really, if it's a campaign that's really important to business, it is slow and almost, you know, diluting the impact that those campaigns can have if you launch globally at the same time. So, and what's the outcome of that is really that the performance is inconsistent and the management teams are sort of saying, well, why is that delayed? Why can't we just do it all at the same time? And that's really what you want to do is get as much out on time in all the markets that you want to operate in so that you become really, really efficient. So my big thing is the centralized versus localized is maybe where the gap is. And really what you need is that connected infrastructure and that coordination between those teams to be much tighter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that totally makes sense. So thank you very much for sharing. I would love to maybe ask you a bit of questions about context. So you've mentioned also AI and LLMs, and we know that now a lot of, you know, marketing leaders are generating content with AI, calling it like a AI growth engine, etc. But when generative AI produce content, we are losing some of the context. So I would love to get your perspective over on that. I mean, it is a critical input, especially for large corporates where messaging has to land, has to resonate with different personas and audiences. What is your point of view on that?
Yeah, so look, I think a key thing here is that, you know, context is massively important to what you're trying to do. And the content that you create isn't really consumed in a controlled journey. It kind of appears even more so now with AI-driven interfaces, search recommendation and channels. You don't control the sequence or the real timing. You know, you've got to create content that's relevant wherever that customer is when they're interacting with your brand, for example. So it can't just be well crafted. It has to sort of align with the moment in which it appears. And that moment is shaped more than audience data. It's about the channel. It's about the cultural expectation. Maybe in regulated markets, it's, you know, the regulatory constraints and the intent of that person. And I think most traditional workflows kind of put it context as that sort of thing that's applied after content was created. A review step, a refinement, you know, as we talked about a minute ago, those regional teams kind of handling some of that refinement. And if it needs to adapt to that kind of constant speed of how that customer interacts, you know, it has to adapt continuously, you know. And I think particularly AI and generative AI sort of changing that it's making that context easier to be part of that initial kind of input. Think of it as, you know, evolutions of things like style guides that you might give to the regional teams that then they interpret. Well, you can involve that in how you dynamically create and design that content from the outset. So essentially, I think it's, you know, AI obviously can help you create lots of content. But the key thing, I think, is that how you can adapt it and how you can evaluate it using AI. So you can put AI-driven quality checks for this content that you know based on the style guide that's dynamic and updated based on that customer's cultural context and the what they're trying to do with your brand in that moment. And suddenly you get content that's really relevant to that customer from a language perspective, but also for what they're trying to do. So I'd say that relevance, the context layer gives you that relevance that's something that you can scale with Gen AI and generative AI, and something that you can actually manage market to market.
Yeah. Yeah, I like how you phrase that. But then, of course, you need to do the right setup. You need to maybe also create custom GPTs or just custom AI tools that support the team, et cetera. That is the way that I would envision a bit more on the operational side. Yeah. So we know that often, you know, like as you mentioned, large brands are trying to be adapting into local markets, and it's such a delicate balance. How can team also support each other around that? How can they create this bridge, as you mentioned?
It's an interesting bridge because, you know, leadership set that global strategy. Local teams understand their local markets. And really, it's that connective, almost connective tissue, or that connective theme that goes through those teams that where it can often kind of fall apart. You know, at central level, I said that, you know, the brand is well defined, messaging, tone and positioning can all be correct, and that's really strong. The issue is when that expression is applied across those kind of local markets without considering how it might land to the end receiver, the person in that local markets, and rigid guidelines that can, you know, prioritize consistency above everything else is probably where problems arise. So what you really want is, you know, letting, you know, customers, it's isn't more control about the center. It's about the clearer boundaries. It's about designing a system where you have guidelines and boundaries, but define what stays consistent and allow teams to adapt within those guidelines and support that adaptation for those local teams with systems, technology, and kind of structure that people can use. You know, we had a customer that had huge volumes of content across, it was a software company, and huge volumes of content across multiple regions. And what the difference there that they implemented was creating this shared system where brand intent was clearly defined and embedded how content's produced at the outset. So it allowed teams to adapt that content for the markets while maintaining all of that alignment at scale. So it's all very well to do it for one thing, but if you don't have it as a design system or infrastructure or technology to back it up, you can't do that in every single market. You can only do it in a couple. So really what you're looking for is scale there.
Yeah. And you've mentioned previously that language should be treated less as a constraint and more as a creative multiplier. And I love the way that you frame that.
Yeah.
Maybe you can share a bit more context or input about what does it mean like a creative multiplier?
Yeah. Look, it's really where it gets sort of interesting, because that really is the shift that I think businesses need to make. You know, when organizations think about language in a global context, most of the time they think about it as kind of a cost, or it's really complicated, and how many languages do we need, and what's the budget, how long is it going to take? But treating it as this idea of a creative multiplier, which is sort of, you know, a term we've coined at Phrase, is flipping it entirely, really. So instead of asking sort of how do you manage those different languages, how do you manage all those customers that have 15 different languages or whatever? You ask how do you use 15 languages to create 15 different distinct brand experiences, right? And every language carries its own texture, rhythm, and emotional range, really. A tagline that might be clever in English probably doesn't, you know, work in French, or it could be, you know, doesn't work in Japanese. But what you need to give the freedom to the teams to have that content and use context of their market to find that right expression. And the goal isn't identical wording, it's consistency of impact. And it's almost that it's flipping it to think about emotional resonance, you know. And when you get that right, I think your brand doesn't just exist in that local market. it feels like it belongs and it's natural in that market. And you've got to give it a little bit of flex to kind of let that happen with the guidelines and everything like that in place. So, and I think most businesses leave that on the table because they still think language is a cost to manage and don't see it as that kind of global asset that can actually speed entry to market or increase engagement with customers or build more users in your, in if it's a software platform, and get more users to use the product or engage with the product. Or, you know, if it's on the retention side, it's how can customers feel happier with what you're delivering to them, you know, because you're actually speaking to them relevantly in their language without kind of that central must have it done this way. And but it's hard, right? It's not simple, and that's where you need to think about the people, process and technology underneath it. And the technology has actually evolved to sufficient levels now where I think you can do that much more easily and quickly and less costly than you used to be able to do it.
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning. So when you're speaking, two thoughts come to my mind. The first one is that, so I'm based in Berlin, and oftentimes, you know, you create your English first company. So you create it in English and then you're trying to now adapt it into the Dutch market. And sometimes, you know, just the length, like the wording is so lengthy. Yeah. So it's not just about like the messaging, it's also about the visual. How does it look like? How does the content fit into the visual assets as well? So with German and Dutch as well, it's always a bit of a challenge. So 100% can relate to that. And the second thing is also there is user experience that come into that. So you've mentioned brands that are handling 15, 20 different markets with different languages. You're keeping them happy by creating also a very, you know, like the kind of like your mouth could be the user experience, keeping them happy when they can use the product in their language. And certain countries, it's super important, like the French market, for example, or the Spanish market, for example. So yeah, I just wanted to say that it's really resonating with me.
Yeah. It's something that, you know, it's something I think, you know, people need to think more carefully about, I think. And you know, we've all been in those situations where it becomes kind of an afterthought and you're like, oh yeah, we do need to do that. And my whole thing is bring it forward, bring it into the process of planning, bring it into the structure and the systems. Don't think that you know, don't have a central, okay, this is, you know, let's take it in your case, let's do it in German and then do everything else. It's like, how do you actually do that at the beginning? Think, okay, this has to be adapted. And if you start pulling that forward, we call it shifting left a little bit. You know, if you start pulling that forward, it changes how you think about things.
Yeah, 100%. So you've touched also the topic of technology. And I would love maybe to dive a bit deeper into that. So how can technology enable marketing leaders to expand strategically into different markets?
Yeah. One of the things, and yeah, okay, I accept anyone, AI is a big hype cycle. Everyone's talking about it at the moment. But there is, with anything that's hyped, there is a kernel of truth in lots of the hype, I think. But it does kind of change what's possible, I think, at a structural level. And I think the biggest unlock really is that speed and what I just talked about and simultaneity, if you will, which is everything happening at the same simultaneously rather than sequentially, which is what the important thing is. So if we take the sort of before and after approach, before using AI or LLMs or whatever you choose to call it, launching a campaign in those 20, 15 markets, whatever, meant weeks of coordination between copywriters. And if you're a big business, it's even worse, you know, copywriters, translators, reviewers, compliance teams in regulated markets, you know, and then the brand teams want to come in and have a look at stuff. So it's very linear. It's very slow. And more importantly to most businesses, it's bloody expensive. And by the time the content reached the market, the window that campaign launches are kind of narrowed, you know, you're doing everything slowly. So it's, but now, and here's the real difference and why it's sort of exciting, is content can be generated and adapted really continuously almost to that. You know, as I said, at the beginning, factor it in, it can be adapted. There are tools that can adapt it instantly. And what's emerging goes even further, the, you know, agentic AI side of things. It's not just models that create content, but systems that can take action, you know, within those guardrails. And more AI can begin to manage parts of the content life cycle, you know, generation, any adaptations I just talked about. But again, that important part, which I think people who aren't kind of in the localization space or the multilingual content space, is that quality. You can't do it all, you know, and there's a big thing with generative AI and AI in general is what's the quality levels, you know, the whole idea of AI slop. None of us want that, I think. But you want the quality evaluation, you want to optimize and then reuse that content. So I think it's moving a lot quicker, you know, these days, you know, even in the last 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, things are going very quickly. And I think, you know, I was reading something with Gartner the other week that, you know, they predict that 40% of enterprise applications will embed all of these agents by the end of this year. And if you look a year ago, I think it was only like 5%. So that's a structural change, I think, that's happening in marketing technology anyway. But I think what really matters is that it works best when it's embedded into the tools and processes that teams already use. You're not having to do anything new. So rather than sitting alongside them as another thing to sort of manage, think of it as kind of this quiet revolution is the best way of thinking about it. And that's where it really can, the value comes from doesn't come from just adding more technology. It comes from how well all of that technology is embedded, how it's connected to the rest of the things that you do across marketing, across content, and as we said, kind of that product. And a big shift, I think, is it changes what's economically viable. So whereas it would have cost you a fortune to do traditional multilingual personalization, you know, and usually reserved for, you know, big brands with deep pockets and all those kind of things, I think now it's accessible to lots of mid-market companies, can now deliver culturally fluent content. You know, you do need the guardrails, and this is why we talk about the plumbing, and you need platforms that can help you manage that. But, you know, when that friction drops between, you know, not being able to do it or just saying we just can't afford to do it, you can experiment more and you can deliver more value to customers, because that's ultimately what it's really about. And you can test new markets and you can treat those markets as a learning opportunity and you learn quickly and run experiments. And I think that's a really, really different way of thinking about it.
Yeah, thank you very much. I 100% agree. You've also mentioned the topic of quality. And I believe that, yes, as marketeers, also we must protect quality, even though we want to produce assets quickly, and speed, you know, is such an important element in marketeer war, but still the quality, we must keep it in mind. So, we're coming to the end of our lovely episode. And I would love to ask you a question about looking ahead. Couple of years, you know, from now, how will AI reshape relationship between brand strategy, localization, personalization, maybe even context?
If I really think about it, where I see it's converging. So those three areas that you mentioned, brand strategy, marketing, personalization, localization, they're all converging. And the probably the most significant sort of structural shift is in the marketing side of things from my point of view. I mean, you know, as a CMO, I'm probably predisposed to saying that, you know, right? But we're all, you know, on the audience of the podcast, you know, CMOs. So I think marketing, you know, it's been structured around functions that are not loosely connected, but not as connected as perhaps they could be, you know, brand, content, regional execution, personalization, digital teams, all of that, each with their own kind of workflows, tools, teams. And I think the model breaks down if you do that at scale, or it becomes difficult. And I think what AI is particularly doing is removing that need for manual coordination, at least. You know, you're moving towards systems that can take in that intent and context and carry it through to all the things that you want to execute, but equally across all of those different functions. So adapting on the way in terms of context and the markets is all part of it. But I don't think it's something that almost gets passed along a sequential chain. That's the real difference, and reinterpreted. I think it's a set of inputs at the beginning. And that's how content will be generated and adapted at the start. Personalization isn't layered on top. It's embedded in the beginning of how content is created and then delivered. So that doesn't... I should really, really caveat all of this, because I don't think it removes the need for human judgment. Far from it, you know. It elevates where humans can add value. So it takes out some of those really automation side of things that just bog you down, or the constraints, you know, the human constraints. And actually it puts, you know, less time on the production mechanics of things, but more time on the strategy and the decisions about how the brand shows up in all those different markets with different audiences. And I think those teams converging is a good thing. And I think, you know, my message towards sort of CMOs on the podcast is that they need to think about, you know, are we on the edge of are we doing this in an old way that's kind of difficult when we actually could use different tools and things that you can actually accelerate a lot of the things you're doing. And I think you can look at how you build competitive advantage by building this into your sort of infrastructure. I would encourage everyone to go off and talk to, you know, if you don't have daily meets with your localization team, bring them in. When you're thinking about campaigns, when you're thinking about growth and you're thinking about new markets, forget the campaigns, go even further. Go, okay, we're thinking about growing into a new market or experimenting in a new market, or we've never gone to that market because it was difficult before. Is that an open? Is there opportunity? So I think people will find opportunities in the convergence of those roles. And I think it's natural. And I think, you know, as you connect the roles, you connect the technology and the ecosystem around that, and then AI is embedded into everything. You don't move it all. You reduce the friction between those teams. So that I see it converging, and I think that's a really good thing.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you very much, Jason. I just want to ask you the last question for our audience. So we talked a lot about technology and connection and people and the kind of like the infrastructure, but what about mindset? So I would love to ask you, if now one of our, you know, podcast listeners, they're a marketeer, they want to start kind of like a global brand multilingual language strategy, what do they need to shift in their mindset in order to get going?
Yeah. If you had a sort of single line, it would be something like design for global from day one. Don't think
loving
about
it.
Design for day one. So a question I'd encourage every marketing leader to kind of sit with and then think about after this is, if we designed our next campaign for 15 markets from the outset, instead of doing that one and then, you know, afterwards going and adapting, what would we actually do differently? How would the brief change for that? What would the teams that we need to bring in, those teams we just talked about converging, should we bring those team into the room at the beginning? And what's the technology we would need? And look at the timeline that we would have had versus the timeline we could have if we just thought about this. So I think that if you just have that kind of mindset and that question, it changes everything. And it reframes a conversation into multilingual execution not being a logistical challenge, but it's actually part of the growth strategy. So, you know, I think a connected ecosystem, moving it all into a design from the outset, a global design from the outset, is really, you know, what you need to be asking yourselves. And I think the opportunity's there. And I think it's getting better. It's getting much more accessible and easier to do. So I think it's exciting times, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Exciting times. Yeah. Jason, thank you very much for being my guest in the episode. And probably I will hear more about your adventures with Phrase.
Yeah, I love it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of CMO Convo. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a rating and review on your preferred platform. Don't forget to tune in next week for another insightful conversation with a leading CMO.